All right, hey, I'm Robbie. For those of you who don't know who Robbie is, let me tell you a little bit about who I am. I am I'm an old guy who used to be in your seat, so I'm an alum of Encounter. And here's a little story of what can happen in this place. You can be the cute drummer. That was me. And then you can be that really hot chick who shares her testimony about how God transformed her life. That's my wife. And then you can be sitting right here on this stage after we're tearing everything down. Used to be on Tuesday nights. And then the guy who was leading worship that you leaned over to while she was sharing her testimony and said, "I have to meet her." He says, "I can make that happen." And I remember I was sitting like actually right about here. And she came up and it was awkward because we were like both dating other people. And but here's what happens is that eventually, in our story, eventually, you know, we've got two beautiful girls and been married for 8 years and have a third on the way. And so I say that as a warning, potential natural consequences of being in this place. Just putting that out there. So, but yeah, I never even went to school at ISU. That's the goofy thing. I don't know who I am. But I know my name's Robbie, and I know that I've got some stories to share with you tonight. So if you want to go ahead and throw the first one up on the screen, which is apparently too tall for what we got going here. But I want to, stories are a big deal in my family with my little girls. And Alex and Nick have gotten to know my little girls, and they're awesome, right, Alex and Nick, wherever you are? They're awesome little girls, yeah. And so one of my favorite stories to read with my girls is Knuffle Bunny. Is this a hot read in the college world, Knuffle Bunny? Knuffle Bunny is an awesome story, especially when about 6 months ago when my baby, Reese, we call her Reese Baby because it's awesome. And so I remember right when she was starting to get her first words, we're reading this story about a little girl who gets her first words. And she's just, you know, a bunch of syllables and talks like, "Aggle flabble clabble." I know this because it's written out phonetically in the book. And so when we get to that part when she's really expressing angst to her father because she's lost her bunny, and it's "Aggle flabble clabble," and I'm reading it like this, and my baby girl just gets all excited, and she starts just saying stuff too. And now that she can actually say some words and point to bunny and things like that, that's just been one of our favorite stories to read together. There's also Pinkalicious, guys, which is a series of books about a girl whose quest is to make everything pink, which is, I feel like, the subplot of my life with three women in my house and potentially another one on the way, so we'll see. My personal favorite is Froggy Goes to Hawaii, just because I love any opportunity to talk about Hawaii, because I went and did some mission stuff when I was in college, left here for a few months and went there, and so that one, I don't even know if my girls like, but it's a children's book, and sometimes I get tired of these other ones and just say, pick one Froggy book, please, for Dad, please, something. But the default is Disney princess stories. Yeah. I can sing every song. I dance to them regularly in my basement. So, you know, it is not an odd thing to walk into my house and to see me waltzing with a three-year-old, singing about dreams coming true and about that feeling and at last I see the light. You know, like, this is... which is the extent of why, if any of you were here last week when I led worship and my fingers were bleeding... because I typically only sing Disney princess songs and, like, you know, children's songs in my basement. And so, stories have become a really fun part of our family. And actually, it's to the point now with my 3.5-year-old Kelsey, we'll be laying in bed at night when we're putting her in bed, and we'll just lay down and our back's looking up into the ceiling, and she says, "Tell me a story, Daddy, about when you were a little boy." And then I'll start into my story, and then she'll stop and say, "And was there a bad guy in the forest?" You know? And then she'll start adding little details. "Does Princess Kelsey come in?" You know? And stories have just been a really formational part of our relationship. It's the default thing that when, like, everything's chaotic in my house and all the toys are out and things are loud and crazy and I'm just like, go get books. And let's go, and we just get into our bedroom and sit on our bed and just get them close and read stories. And that's just been a really big blessing in our lives. And so for those of you who got the honor and privilege to spend a weekend with me at the fall retreat, you'll know that I'm not really much of a preacher. I'm more of just a guy who tells a lot of stories. And so we're going to go in that same vein tonight. And I want to share with you another story so you can go on to the next one. But recently I've been reading a book that as I've been kind of going on this journey of figuring out who I am and where I fit in the world and things like that. And in this book, it's called Every Good Endeavor. There's a story told. Any of you guys fans of J.R.R. Tolkien? He wrote some books, right? What books did he write? I'm blanking right now. Lord of the Rings. Hey, there we go. And some movies, apparently, that were kind of a big deal that were like 17 hours long each. J.R.R. Tolkien was this guy who spent like 25 years before he even started really, truly writing the books, coming up with this backstory and had this grand vision for those stories of Lord of the Rings. He had written, if any of you know, he's written languages for the characters in the story that don't exist anywhere else in the world, that he wrote just as this kind of subplot and background to make this story come more to life. And he had spent his entire life, it was his life's work. And there was a point in time where the world around him was kind of crumbling. World War II was happening. There was just death and destruction around. His editor was getting frustrated because he just kept on writing more and more and more pages and more plot lines and characters. And he was frustrated, and he just kind of stopped writing for a while. And in that time, he wrote this short story. And the short story is called Tree and Leaf. And he published it in a journal in England back in the 40s. It also has got a unique name called Leaf by Niggle. Now, I realize by saying the word niggle, it is one or two letters away from a very inappropriate word. And so I'm going to do my best in sharing this story to not say something inappropriate. Can I just put that out there up front? I'm saying niggle with an L and an E at the end. Okay. So I'm going to do my best to not use that name a lot, but it is the character of this story that he wrote, and it's kind of his own. In essence, it's his story, and in some points, it's also ours. So if you'll indulge me for a little while, this character is picture an older gentleman, retired. The story doesn't really tell us what exactly he did with his career or what his life was about before this point in time, but it depicts that he's an older gentleman, and he's talking about this long journey that is coming up. And the long journey is meant to symbolize death. But death was around the corner for him. And he lived out in the countryside away from the village where he would have been known maybe for an occupation or some sort of contribution to society. And by this point in time in his life, he was just known as the guy who had a nice garden and a pretty nice country cottage home out there. And but there came a point in time when the end of his life was coming near. He had always sort of dabbled in painting. And actually, when you look up the word niggle in the dictionary, it means to work at a very ineffective pace or rate. To sort of just start one thing here and never finish it and start one thing over here and just to kind of dabble with things. And so he'd always sort of dabbled with painting. But as his life was coming to an end, he wanted to finish his dream, his vision, his life's work, much like Tolkien. He had always had this vision of this beautiful landscape that he would paint that would start with this tree in the center. And this tree would be the start. And in the foreground would be these rolling mountains or rolling hills and mountains in the background. And he had this grand vision. And so he had gotten a very large canvas. He actually took his garden shed and he had put up this large canvas to the point where he actually had to use a ladder to even paint at the top corners of this canvas. And as he was working on it, he would work day and night. He stopped. He neglected his gardens. He neglected his home. It was falling into disrepair because he was so engulfed in finishing his life's work. And he would think about it when he was supposed to be sleeping, and he would think about it when he was supposed to be working on his home, and he would constantly work on it. And he would work on one leaf for weeks, months at a time, just to get the shading on it just right, to get the dew drops that were on it just perfect. And he would get frustrated, and he would scratch it out and start over and repaint over things. Then he'd go over here because this wasn't working, and he'd paint the hills, or he'd get into the mountains in the background. And it was never quite coming out the way he had always envisioned or imagined. And it was becoming kind of frustrating for him. And over time, another frustrating part was that he had this neighbor. Do any of you have an annoying neighbor? like the one who, you know, makes really smelly food and makes your whole apartment smell like, I don't know, curry, things like that. I had one of those in college, and he had this neighbor who was constantly nagging him to help with things. So here's this old man who's being nagged by another old man to help him. And this neighbor would come over and kind of pull on his pant leg and say, I need you to help me with this, and completely ignore the fact that he's working on his life's work. This is my masterpiece. And the guy doesn't even see it. And one day, a really nasty day, he comes over and says, my wife is ill. I need you to go to town and get the doctor and bring it back for her. Would you do that for me? And because Niggle was a kind-hearted soul, even though he's mumbling under his breath some very inappropriate things about his neighbor, he agreed and went into town and got the doctor and brought the doctor back. But in the process, he became ill himself. And over the course of the next few weeks, it was evident that death was coming. And he was beginning to become really even more disheartened as he's looking at his masterpiece, and it's not anywhere close to finished. But he can tell that his body is ending, is coming to an ending point, and he's frustrated. And he keeps working and keeps working. But then one day, there's a knock at the door, and it's death, and it's time to go. And he just looks at his masterpiece, and he just starts sobbing, weeping, that he had never completed his life's work. It's not finished. It's not finished. And he's just sobbing as death kind of comes his way. And I just want to share that story as the starting point to our conversation, and then we'll see if some other stories I have to add to that might bring that back into play. So let's pray. God, thank you for this place where we get to come and encounter you. Thank you for the work that you've done in my life in this room and in my family as a result of the faithfulness of this ministry and what happens in this room once a week where we seek you and we come to encounter you. And God, I just ask that tonight you would let your words be shared and your vision be shared, and that you could use a blubbering idiot like me to communicate your truth. And so would people leave here tonight encouraged and drawn closer to you? We ask this in your name. Amen. All right. So with that story in mind, I want you guys to, I want to kind of just share a little bit more about my story so we can go on to the next slide. For those of you who don't already know, I'm a bit of a dreamer. So my head is always up in these clouds. I mean, I'm always thinking about the next big thing or what could be. And this is something that's been kind of both a blessing and a curse in my life, my entire life. And to some extent, I think this dreamer sort of mentality that I have is much the same for our generation. I claim myself to be still a part of your generation. And so we've been told since we were little kids that go get your dreams. Just do, you can do whatever you set your mind to. We've been told this since we were little kids. And so I bought it, hook, line, and sinker. And since I was a little kid, I mean, I remember when I was like 5 or 6 years old, I grew up about 7 houses south of Pete and Paulette. So if any of you know where Pete and Paulette live on Linden Street, my parents are just 7 blocks or 7 houses down there. So, you know, just up the road from the world's most glorious cheese balls at the Pub 2. And that's where I grew up. And in the backyard, we have this awesome creek, Sugar Creek, that goes through Normal here. And so as a kid, I had this creek behind me. At this time, when I was a little kid, there was actually a horse and cornfields still right in the center of town that were right back there. And so as a kid, this was a really awesome place to grow up. But I didn't just see a creek, because I had been going to Turkey Run. Any of you guys ever been to Turkey Run before? Experienced the joy and the awesomeness of that place? It's this, you know, state park over in Indiana where there's a river and there's trails and a punch bowl and things like that. And so you only know that if you've been there, I guess. But I, after having gone there a few times, just when I was a little kid, I saw this little piddly creek in my backyard that only actually had water in it like 7 times a year. And I saw Turkey Run. I saw potential. And I took my best friend Matt, who was a year younger than me, therefore impressionable, and I said, hey, Matt, we are going to make this creek, we're going to call it Hidden Creek, and we're going to make this the premier location in Bloomington Normal for people to come and experience nature, just like Turkey Run. And so we got into my dad's tool shed, and we started taking rakes and shovels and hoes and things out, and we start clearing paths through the creek, And we would take rocks and we would make cool little waterfall things, you know, if it rained. And I had this vision. I would have sleepless nights. I was drawing out, you know, like how the map would be. And I had this sign that I had created, Hidden Creek. Yeah. That sign took like 7 revisions. And I remember thinking, literally thinking, I'm going to get this in the pantograph and people are going to come and experience this. As a 5 and 6 year old kid, whatever, however old I was. And we had a grand reveal where we invited our families to come and expecting that, you know, troves of people would be coming to our backyard to see this wondrous nature. And you know, at the end of it, it was cool. Don't get me wrong. It was kind of the foundation for me to later be a landscape designer there for a few years. But it wasn't exactly what I thought. I didn't see droves of people coming. My parents weren't like, you know, fawning over my awesomeness. And the sign, yeah, it was okay. But that was just kind of the start of these visions that I had that never really panned out. As I got on later in life, I would look at my bedroom, my 9x10 bedroom, and said, oh, I've heard about this thing on campus, because I lived like, you know, blocks from campus, and I would go rollerblading down that awesome ramp down Milner Library. You know the one? That was awesome as a kid. Probably still awesome. And I remember people, when it was move-in day, I'd always come down and people watch. And they were making loft beds out in, like, the grass areas. Have you guys experienced this? And I was like, loft bed, that's it. That will make my bedroom epic. Okay? So I started drawing out, like, my new floor plan of my 9x10 bedroom and showing it to my dad and proposing to him that we build a loft bed and convinced him to do that. And it would spend sleepless nights and pieces of paper drawing this all out so that I could have my drafting table and I could have my book nook and I could have my spot to read while still sleeping comfortably overhead and still have Rock the sports border that was in my bedroom. And again, once that actually came to fruition, it was never quite exactly what I had thought. As I got older, started, you know, 15, 16 years old, I'd been to several church camps and youth retreats over my time and just loved the experiences at those places. And I dreamed of someday building my own retreat center, this awesome place full of this just amazing aesthetic that invites people to come and dive into relationship with each other and experience God and his nature. And I would spend hours drawing acreage plans of how this would be in specific cabins. I don't know about you guys, but I started noticing from a young age that I had these gifts, talents, and abilities that started kind of coming out in me. But they were always never quite, nothing ever came to fruition quite the way that I thought. And as I became an adult, that also became true. Somehow I got into education. And one of my first jobs as a teacher, I remember I was working as a special ed teacher, and I had these students, and I was told that I had to help these students who have behavior disorders, who were just like, mad at the world, pissed off at the world, and I had to make them function in a regular classroom, which was really, really difficult because they didn't give a rip about a research paper. I don't know if you knew this. They don't care. They have bigger needs that need to be met, and I was so frustrated one day, and I went to my principal and just started, like, complaining to him, just saying, man, this is not what is best for every kid. They don't need this. We need to be addressing their emotional needs. We need to be diving into relationship with these kids. They don't need algebra and trigonometry. They need to be able to function in a relationship with other people. And I was just going off, and my boss said, well, then do something about it. It's like, what? It's like, I don't know. What would you do? And I started rattling off all these ideas, and he goes, do that. It's like, what's that? I don't know. Pitch it to me. And so I went back, and I spent weeks putting together a proposal that I took to him and said, what if we started a school like this? I don't know. Eventually, it took it to the school board, and 5 years ago, I started and built a school that looked much like what I had drawn out and envisioned what would be best for these kids. And over the course of the last 5 years, I've worked with 51 different students to help provide a better education for them. And yet, here I am 5 years later going, that still isn't exactly what I was thinking. There are 48% of the students that I've worked with that have dropped out, been incarcerated, that have not been successful as a result of what I've done. I'm going, ah! And again, I'm frustrated that these dreams and visions I have don't come all the way to fruition. And so I relate to this story. I relate to this man drawing and painting this picture and looking at his life and going, everything I'm working so hard for, it's good. It's okay. But it's never quite exactly what I had thought. And even my marriage and my family, I don't know if you know this, but marriage isn't easy. Relationships aren't easy. Parenting isn't easy. Apparently, we're going to have a third child, which means we're going zone instead of man-to-man. That's not easy, okay? And it scares me to some extent. And to be honest, I don't have these grand dreams and visions of what my family was going to be like, but man-to-man was part of it. And yet, I don't know, there are some great moments, some awesome times of Knuffle Bunny reading that are just fantastic. But then there are times where she doesn't know what to say, and she's saying things to me. I'm like, I don't know what you want. And she just keeps going, and we're frustrated. And I'm like, let's read a book. And she just keeps screaming. I'm like, no, that didn't work. And all of life, and I hope by now you've been able to kind of transpose your own story into this. You can look in your experience to this point in time, your 19, 21 years, whatever, how old you are, and you can say, man, some of these things that I've had dreams and visions for, even maybe your college experience, maybe the relationships that you thought you'd have by now, the career opportunities that you thought you'd have before you, maybe some of the ones that have really panned out and been great, but then after a while start to lose their luster. And your story is maybe a lot like mine, and maybe a lot like Tolkien, and maybe a lot like Niggle. But that story is just a part of a big story. The big story is sort of the narrative of the Bible. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but my friend Josh Jeffrey works at Spread Truth, and he developed this really cool, they call it The Story. And if any of you are electronically inclined, and by that I mean for all of you, there's an app out there that tells this story in a really cool way that you can go and get either an Apple or an Android device that walks you through this. But he breaks down the whole story about the Bible. This whole story that I'm talking about tonight, it really is about this. It starts with creation. In the beginning, there was nothing. And God, though, was there. This perfect God. And I think last week, I think Ben did an awesome job describing over here, this perfect God, for those of you who were here last week. For those of you who weren't, God is a picture over here on this box of perfect light, of perfect awesomeness, of everything right and true and real and meaningful and purposeful is God. And that God then created. There was nothingness, and he said, I want land to go here, and I want water to go here, and I want sky to go here, and fish, you're in the water, and animals, you're walking on that, and vegetation, I want you to grow there. And he put things into motion, and he created, and at the end of it, he said, this is good. And everything that he had done to that point still was within this box. It was perfect. It was absolutely right. And then he went on and created the crown of his creation, which was human beings. He created Adam and Eve in his image. He created them, and again, it was perfect. Their relationship with God was perfect. Their relationship with each other was perfect. Their meaning and purpose in life was perfect. God said to them, I've created all of this, and I give it to you to subdue it, to rule over it, to continue in my image creating. He charged human beings. He said, take this world and continue creating. And look where we've gone today. Just continuing to evolve and in his image. And at that point in time, everything was perfect. Everything was. Even creation and the relationship to humanity was perfect. But then you all know the second part of the story. The fall. Just a few pages into the Bible, it talks about this perfect relationship. And when we talk about a relationship is something where both people choose to be a part of it. It's not really a relationship if it's like perfect God and he creates these robots. No, he gives us the ability to choose relationship because that's what real relationship is, right? And in that choice, he says, don't do this one thing and we're good. This is what is best. Let's stay here. And instead, you know the story. Adam and Eve chose to go and to go against what God had asked. And now all of a sudden, we've got perfection here. And then Ben did a really great job of last week saying that here we are over here in humanity. And as a result of the fall, what once was perfect relationship with God, there's this huge chasm between them that's broken. Relationship with each other. I don't know if you know this, but the fact that my wife is now pregnant with a third and she's been sick and throwing up every day, it didn't used to be like that. It used to be perfect. Our relationship with each other, we never used to have like unmet expectations of doing dishes. Wasn't happening over here, but it is now. And there used to be a time when even when a toddler was crying, it would have been like perfect somehow. And yet now it's frustrating. And on top of that, it snowballed and everything got off. And Ben did an awesome job of saying that humanity then desiring the most important thing over there was that perfect relationship with God starts using that old school scale type of thing where we're constantly trying to do enough good things to warrant this relationship to be perfect again. And we've realized that there's never, ever, ever, ever enough. And in the midst of that, there's this chasm that needs to be healed. And because that relationship with God we want so badly to make right, we don't even know that we want that anymore. As the generations grow older and as we get further removed from the original fall, we don't even know that relationship with God is what we want, but we know that there's something inside of us that we want fulfilled. We know that we want purpose. We know that we want to belong. We know that we want to be affirmed. We know that we want to have relationship. We know we want all these things, but we don't know that we want it only from the one thing that can truly provide it, which is God himself. Instead, we take this fallen world and we put this fallen world over here on this pedestal and think, this is what we want. And we look to the world to affirm in us these things and to provide for us these things that only God can fill. And we put the world on that pedestal over there and we move the true, holy, the only thing that really works out of the picture. And when I've been pursuing occupational triumphs, when I've been working in the education world, and I've done big things, I've gone and made these documentaries, and I've been trying to change the world of public education because I don't think it's best, and I have this vision for what is really best and what God really wants for it, and even in the name of God, I'm pursuing this, and I'm looking for accolades from the world, and I'm looking for people to say, you, Robbie, are awesome, you're it, you're the answer to what's going wrong in public education, thank you. What do you know? I've made just like a little drip and a little ripple, and not a whole lot's really changing. I've spoken in front of thousands of people. Numerous people have shared videos and things that I've made around the world, and yet nothing is really happening. And in the meantime, I'm going, I don't feel good. I don't feel happy. I don't feel fulfilled. I'm discontent, and I'm looking to fill that void with the fallen world. Instead of the only thing that can fill it truly, which is the Creator itself. Instead, I'm looking for creation to fill something. But as we sang tonight, and as hopefully you guys know, there came a rescue. God, in his perfectness, sent his only Son, took his only Son that was perfect as well, and sent it into this mess. And became fully man and fully God and was still perfect, even living in this fallen, hurtful, not perfect world. And then took our place. And Ben did a really cool thing last week where he took that gown, that robe, and kind of put it over us. And Jesus came and rescued us and said, because this perfection cannot spend time with this fallen sin. He's so perfect that the sin stuff just doesn't jive. It's not working. The only way to truly be in relationship with him is to be perfect yourself. And you're never going to do that on your own, especially when you're pursuing the world to make you perfect. Instead, Jesus comes and he takes his perfection and he wraps it around us and bridges the gap. And now, for those of us who say, I don't know how this all works, but I believe in Jesus. We now look at this, and this becomes this perfect relationship. It's rescued. It's restored. And in the process, we now get to partner with him in redeeming and restoring this world back to what it once was. The next slide, 1 John 4, 9 through 10 says, "This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his only one and only Son into the world that we might live through him, truly live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins." He makes the way. Go ahead to the next slide. He goes on in John 16, he says, "I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world." I put that picture up there of a leaf because here's the deal. For those of you who know Jesus and profess to be Christians, I've been a Christian for 25 years since my brother led me to Christ in our bathtub. It's a weird story. I didn't want to go to hell. And so since that time, I've been pursuing Jesus Christ. And I've been growing in my relationship with God. And I've accepted this gift, this atonement that he's provided for us. And yet, when I sometimes buy into the lie that I think because of that, I'm going to experience perfection. But the deal is that we still live in a fallen world. And even though my relationship has been restored, the world is still fallen around us and is in the process of being redeemed and restored. And one day, I thought Ben's analogy of winter and spring, I hate February. So for you three or four people who like it, I'm sorry. But Central Illinois, man, it is dead. And I think even though when Arnold saw that vine and it was dead, here's the cool thing, is that it's still alive. That's just the way you look at the world. We can look at that and say, it's still alive. It'll come back. But now in this world, I put that one leaf up there because even on our best days, we're gonna paint one leaf in that big masterpiece picture of our lives, in that life's work. We're gonna get a couple of maybe really great leaves out. But in terms of seeing that full masterpiece, we're not truly going to be able to experience that until that last part of the big story, which is the restoration, fully happens when we are united with Christ and there's a new heavens and a new earth, and will we really experience that? And so I guess the band, I would love for you guys to kind of come up, and we're gonna close with a little bit of worship, and then I'll come up afterwards. But as they're singing a couple of songs here, I want you all to think. What are the things that you have put in place of God? What are the things that you are looking in the created world to provide that sense of wholeness or to help you achieve that masterpiece picture that you have for your life? I'm guessing, like me, a lot of you have visions of what your life will be. Let's be honest, we're looking at graduations coming up soon and walking across the stage and job opportunities and relationships leading to marriage and kids and families, and there are expectations that are out there. But are you putting those dreams and visions ahead of the Creator himself? And I want you, as they're singing a couple of songs, just to think and reflect a little bit on, where are you at in this masterpiece picture? And is there anything that you need to surrender? Is there anything that you need to turn over and stop looking to the fallen world, but look to the Creator to give you that sense of wholeness? So I'll turn it over to these guys, and I'll come back up afterwards. You are stronger. Christ is risen, and sin is broken. Let's go back to our story. Because maybe some of you are asking, okay, that's kind of a bleak picture you painted, Robbie. life is never going to fulfill. That's kind of sad. But the neat part about this story that Tolkien writes about this man is there's this scene where the character, it doesn't specifically say it, but you know by reading it that it's Jesus. Jesus speaks up on behalf of this man who've been working so hard, and because of of Jesus, he says, he hasn't done enough, but I'm taking his place. And so I'm redeeming and restoring this guy Niggle, and I'm going to take him to heaven. And there's this beautiful picture. He hops on this train, and the train stops at no important place. There's no train stop there, but he gets off the train and he starts walking up a hill, and all of a sudden he sees. If you put this up, he sees not just the painting that he had always been wanting to paint, but he sees it in real life. He sees the tree way better than he had ever even thought or imagined it could be. He sees every leaf coming out and bursting full of life. And he sees that beyond there. He sees those rolling hills he always imagined and those mountains off in the background. And when he sees this, he goes, thank you. Thank you. This is a gift. This is life. And I think about that. And I think about all of these things that I want so badly. And I think about all these things that I work so hard to attain. And that I know that God has created me at creation. He thought about me and he said, I'm going to make Robbie, I'm going to make his thing, this potential. When he sees, whether it's a student or a person that he's mentoring, or he sees an organization that he's working with or a house that he's remodeling, he is going to see potential. And I'm stitching that into Robbie's DNA. And he's stitched something into each of yours as well. Something that we are never going to fully feel, that sense of actually reaching it, what we're really pining for. But for those of us who profess faith in Jesus Christ and say, I don't get how it works, but I know that what you are describing over here, this perfect relationship, this purpose in life, if you're saying that it only comes by Jesus, then I'm in. I believe that he took the spot so that this can happen. And we believe we have hope so that we can see this world, we can see these glimpses of eternity. We can see in the students' lives that I work with the potential, and we can see that even though I'm not getting them there, we can see that God's got something going on. When I see the house that I've been working on and desiring to be this awesome place, this awesome environment, instead of seeing the drywall cracks and the grout popping that I see, I can look at it and go, this doesn't matter. God's got a better house. There's going to be a day when all of everything that I long for will be experienced, and it will all be experienced in perfect relationship with God. A friend of mine, one of my best friends, a family member is living with him in their house, and he came home the other night, and she was just sobbing on the couch. Some things had all happened that day to where she was just in a rough spot. And she went on to say, she used to be a student here, she wanted to say, I poured everything I had into school. I wanted to be the best flautist that the world could know. I wanted to change the face of music by studying my instrument and being the best at playing the flute. And she did that. She was awesome at it. And she said, but it just wasn't enough. And then I was looking for something. And so I said, you know what? I'm not finding it here. So I'm going to go and I'm going to travel. I'm going to go find myself in the world. And she traveled all across Europe, had some amazing experiences. And at the end of that, she still was going, but this isn't still enough. And so she said, I'm going to dive head into this relationship. And so she found this guy, and she went all in on this relationship, gave him everything that she had. And that, too, fell apart. And it wasn't enough. And as she's just sitting there kind of pouring out her heart to my friend, he just looks her in the face and says, I know you don't want to hear this, but what you are saying is that you have a God-shaped hole inside your heart, inside your life, that you have tried to take the fallen creation and replace that hole and to make you feel whole, to make you feel like you have purpose, to make you feel like your life matters. All these dreams and things that you have, you are looking to the world to give what only God can give you. And I think all of us are in that spot as well. Even those of us who've been following Jesus for a while, we wake up every day and we go back to this scale, and we're trying to figure out, how can we be enough? How can we feel enough? How can I make myself feel happy? How can, and despite the gray day out there, how can I just feel good? And we try and put stuff in its place. We try to put a Facebook status out there so that people will like it enough to where I'm going, I'm okay. Right? And then when we see that we only got 7 likes, we're like, hello, world! We're awesome! Tell me I'm awesome. Tell me that I'm okay. Tell me that I am good. Tell me that the things I'm doing matter. And we're looking in the wrong place. May tonight just be a reminder that, yes, we live in a fallen world where we're never going to see this in our life now. But we can get glimpses of it, right? As Christians, we can claim and we can look at the world and we can see spring coming. We can see leaves budding out on that dead branch and see grapes coming off of it. We can see the world differently. And as a result, in this world, this fallen world now, we can partner with God to bring about restoration into the lives and into the world around us. And that is hope. And that's something I'm in. That's something that maybe you are in for. And maybe some of you are tonight and you don't know Jesus. You haven't decided to follow this, but you know that you want to experience that and you want to see the world that way and you want to fill that God-shaped hole with the only thing that can, with God himself. And if that's the case, I'd love to chat with you, or Ben or Phil or anyone else who's in leadership around here would love to chat with you guys about that. But my challenge for those of you who are following Jesus this week, let's do some damage. let's do some surgery on our hearts and get our pursuits in the world. It's not bad to have goals or to have dreams, but if we're putting them ahead of God, then we're off, and we need to get some of those things in the right place. So this week, let's try and get a couple of leaves out, and let's get closer and get a better picture of God's vision for our lives. So let me pray and send you guys off. Jesus, thank you. Thank you for coming and for being stronger and for providing that atoning sacrifice that restores relationship with our Creator. Thank you for restoring purpose into this fallen world. Thank you for bringing hope. God, would you just this week do surgery on our hearts? Would you just get those false gods, those things that we have up on a pedestal, would you get them out of the way, and would you redeem and restore our vision and our view of this life? And would you take back your rightful place? And God, if there's anyone in here who doesn't yet know you and has yet to put faith in Jesus Christ, God, would you just stir in their hearts and empower them to choose you? Thank you for your faithfulness. And would you just move all of us here at Encounter closer to you? And as a result, would you use us to bring hope and this picture of redemption to this fallen campus and this fallen world? We love you. We ask all this in your name. Amen. Thank you guys for having me. Have a great week.